Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Well, I have Aaron Tilbury with me, and we're going to be bringing him on very soon. And again, I don't want to marginalize who this man is. He's a local hero. But let me get into the rant, because I was talking about this last week, that there have been many a times where individuals have been moved forward, and Bill Cosby is a great example because I've used that in the past, as well as Denzel Washington is now stepping into the limelight. And what happens is, when you start poking your finger into the eyes of those who are in control of the paradigm and the dialogue, like Bill Cosby did when he says, hey, you know, the prison system, and Denzel Washington has been saying the same thing lately, that the prison system is not our problem, that it's the family, and we need to start, you know, looking at our communities and families and pulling them back together and stop rewarding broken families and rewarding bad behavior. Let me move forward, though. Because I have Aaron Tilbury in, we're not going to have the phone lines open for you, but you do need to kind of listen to all of these shows. And as a matter of fact, I hope that as you're moving forward into Christmas this year, what's left of it, and you do have room for charity, I hope you tune in, or at least re-listen to this broadcast, because I'm hoping that you can find some charity to helping the Jonah Project. And that's really the impetus of why I've asked Aaron to come back in today to talk about some of their needs and requirements. On the 8th, this Friday, is Reverend John Repsold, and he's talking about public school issues. So if you want to understand that, go to the Republican Coffee Club. The information is on my links page. And so let me move forward, because last week I was talking about all these different allegations that are coming out now. Some of these are politically driven. It's not like anybody has a moral high ground when all of a sudden for 40 years, 10 years, it doesn't matter. You've been silent for all of this, and then all of a sudden you bring it forward now. And so let me be very clear on what I'm trying to say. I am a proponent for moral behavior, and I am against any form of harassment in any way. I am an advocate for free speech. I am an opponent for hate crimes and the extracting of social justice. I believe our legal system works if we apply the laws. And let's remember that we have statutes of limitations and double jeopardy laws for good reasons. And let me add to this that what we are reaping today is the byproduct of our cultural war that we ended up losing on the moral high ground, because they opened up this concept of free love and anything and everything is open. And so you cannot let the genie out of the bottle and expect that everybody is going to be, you know, priests and nuns and whatever you want to do. We've actually sexualized our children in the school systems, and we have become a society of moral turpitude. So if you read my first book, you will find that I believe that there are divine roles within the family, and that the Lord is pretty clear on how we behave as men and women, fathers and mothers and children. As a matter of fact, I think there's 21 scriptures alone that tell the children to honor and obey their parents, that there's no latitude that the children should be dictating how they feel or what they want. It is incumbent on parents to teach their children to walk in the ways of the Lord. And I think it's something like the sins of the children will lay on the parents if they do not do their divine role and responsibility. So let me move on. We have to understand that the fact of an allegation today has become a tool to destroy good people when we and so we have to start asking ourselves, when these things start coming forward, who is this person making this claim? You know, you have to look at the all the details of why now, why so long, and so forth. Is this just a part of a, you know, I feel safe now to come out, or is this a tool of trying to hurt somebody and damage them? And if you put this into historical context, in this nation, the question was always, are they Christian? And are they a member in good standing in their local community church? And are they godless? Why is this important? Why does this even matter? Because it really does matter. It is imperative to know whether a person is a Christian in good standing with their church. And in a historical context, I'll explain, because this is what Alexis de Tocqueville stated in his book in Democracy in America, and I'm quoting here. While I was in America, a witness who happened to be called at the assizes of the county of Chester declared that he did not believe in the existence of God or in the immortality of the soul. The judge refused to admit his evidence on the ground that the witness had destroyed beforehand all the confidence of the court in what he was about to say. The newspapers related this fact without any further comment, unquote. So to be very clear, our legal system was based on the fact that we were Christians and that we had to be Christians in good standing. And this quote actually happened. This wasn't in the early 1750s. This was August 23rd, 1831. This wasn't an outlier. This was the standard. And as a matter of fact, I'll even go back further. When Thomas Jefferson was the governor of Virginia and was ran out of Monticello by Benedict Arnold and was unable to get to Richland to be able to do the succession of power to the new governor, because that following day was when the new governor was seated and Thomas Jefferson was still in the woods being chased. The new governor, who didn't like Thomas Jefferson, basically charged him of abandonment of his post. So when a traveling circuit judge came, and this happened before he became an emissary for the new Continental Congress and the new United States with a little u, the judge came in, and because most people know that Thomas Jefferson wasn't an active Christian anymore. So when the judge came in to do the hearing, he called all the people, all the officers of the court forward to his bench, and he said, Mr. Jefferson, in front of everybody, he said, Mr. Jefferson, I know that you're an officer of this court, so I will allow you to ask and cross-examine. However, I also know, because it was public knowledge, or at least it was brought forward at this point in time to the judge, he said, I also know that you are not a Christian in good standing. Therefore, I will not allow you to bear testimony in my court. Now, this was documented by Dumas Malone in his six-series volume of Thomas Jefferson, but it also highlights the paradigm of the time and that we were a very moral society and that we had these standards that we had to go by. Let me also add the U.S. Supreme Court Justice Joseph Story, who later, towards the 1860s, in his biography, commented that infidels and pagans were banished from the halls of justice as unworthy of credit. That's quote unquote. So what is an infidel or a pagan? They're non-believers, and they did not believe in this higher power. So these infidels were atheists or non-Christians or Christians that weren't in good standing. And this is a doctrine that was shared amongst, all of the states, and our legal system was based on this. Don't let anybody convince you that we were not a Christian nation. We were. So we have this opposing ideology, and I'm going to run out of time on this, but I will get back to this when we come back from break, because I have this feeling I'm going to hear music in my ears. But the communists, the secular progressives, and the democratic leaders all share one doctrine with Islam, and it's called the Taqiyya. And in plain English, what I call it is lying, cheating, and deceit, because this doctrine allows you to do whatever is necessary to lie, to cheat, or be deceitful to further your cause. This is a doctrine that's within the Islamic, and this is a doctrine of communism. It's whatever propaganda is necessary. If you read The Republic, Plato basically said that the state was responsible to keeping people in check, and if they had to lie to do that using propaganda, then that's what they needed to do to ensure that people were compliant to the state. And so this is a very evil ideology that is shared. And so here's my heartbreak, as I knew it was coming up. And so I will finish this, and we will be back with Aaron Tilbury after this break. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Thank you. So as I was just ranting, and welcome back. We do have Aaron Tilbury right at the mic, so he's about ready to jump. As long as we continue to further, or as long as these people can continue to further their cause by lying and making false accusations, what they, and some of these people call this is a white lie, but it's a lie nonetheless. So let me be clear. Again, as an advocate for free speech, as an opponent for hate crimes and social justice, one thing has to be unequivocally clear. We do not have unabashed carte blanche freedom of speech. You cannot yell fire in the theater. You cannot defame or slander a person, and you cannot say bomb on an airplane. We need to once again remove the evil tool of lying, cheating, and deceit to further causes. When someone uses speech as a weapon to cause harm to their person, family, profession, campaign, whatever it is, what we're actually looking at is vigilante justice. If there is no evidence to afford the accused due process, because we are a nation of laws and the Constitution guarantees every individual due process, then maybe the accusers, maybe we need to change our paradigm and have the accusers do the time of the crime they alleged. That will keep people from moving forward unless they have some level of evidence. This is a runaway tool of false accusations, and unless it's if it keeps on going as an unchecked tool, then we are advancing a crime against our laws and our legal system. And so that's really what I've been trying to get out. And I wanted to put this into the historical context that as a Christian nation, as we've moved forward, letting this genie out of the bottle of all sorts of perversions and the byproducts of the counterculture revolution, then we have to understand that these are the consequences of this. You cannot be surprised of what's happening in D.C. and what's been happening all over the place. And as a matter of fact, I think that kind of lends to, the fact that Aaron Tilbury's whole life and his whole direction in ministry has been, you know, diverted in dealing with this crisis. That we're truly at a crisis point, because I think, and now Aaron is with us, what did you say, about 3,000 people, 3,000 kids and women and boys are trapped in Spokane?
The numbers that I have right now are about half of that typically, and then when we have, you know, events, I think that the 3,000 plus number was a number that's estimated by local law enforcement and some of the other agencies as well. For events like Hoot Fest and Bloomsday and those types of things.
So I've been hearing that Las Vegas is just this huge hub of sex trafficking and so forth. So the majority of the prostitutes or what have you, these slaves, they are actually out-of-towners.
Yeah, so it really exists in the same way here as it does in Las Vegas or any of these other major hubs, whether we're talking about Chicago, Houston, Atlanta, Charlotte, North Carolina. We, you know, obviously talked on the show before about how we've actually housed young women from the coast. And so you have kind of like the way you would run cattle or horses on a rodeo circuit. You have literally a slave trade circuit. You know, you were actually talking about some biblical stuff earlier, which I, of course, really dig. A little biased and partial myself to the biblical history. And when we talk about, Jesus saying he came to set the captives free, right?
Right.
One of the things I talk with our church and our group about a lot is, certainly we're talking about spiritual freedom, but he was talking about physical freedom. Christ was born right into, literally, geographically, the epicenter of that day's slave trade.
Yes.
And so this has been something that's been on God's heart from the beginning.
Sure.
Yeah.
And as I've mentioned this in my first book, that I truly believe that the first sin that was created was outside of murder, was slavery. I mean, the first sin in practice, because I believe one of the first laws that God gave Adam was that man should live by the sweat of his brow. Mm. So help me out here. When you're having slaves or other people doing your bidding in work, are you sweating? Then you're not living by the sweat of your brow.
That's good, man. No, that's good. And it's exactly it. I mean, in today, you know, of course, we have so many different terms for this. Prostitution has been the age-old term. And quite frankly, it divorces the predator, the seller of the slave,
right,
the people that are complicit in it happening, from any responsibility, right? It just puts it all on the victim, and we've gotten away from that with that for thousands of years. And in fact, Christ talked about that in the New Testament when he addressed so many different things. And then Paul hits it in Galatians as powerfully as anybody other than Jesus could. It was for freedom's sake that he came.
Right.
Like, not all the other, you know, behavioral stuff that we're talking, it's for freedom's sake. So this is a big issue in my mind to Jesus.
Right. And so in a libertarian concept, they believe that people should be able to be, you know, have freedom and or the agency to be able to do anything that they want. And so I think a libertarian would support the idea of legal prostitution like you have in Nevada and I think maybe in New Orleans.
Yeah, yeah.
And I truly see that as the a den of corruption and a den of iniquity.
But yeah, I think it's there are a lot of people that fundamentally don't understand this issue, right? So I think a lot of, you know, whether it's libertarians or anybody else, again, you know, we've talked about this before, I'm pretty non or apolitical, but the reality is we have such a fundamental misunderstanding of this issue that to make, I think, generalized statements like that about a group of people that, as we're talking about, have been victimized, who don't have choice, who don't have real freedom or liberty, that you've talked about the difference between even freedom and liberty, and
right,
both of those things are absent for these victims. And
sure.
So it is... to this day, never happened that I have in my entire life seen a child, male or female, child, boy or girl, ever say that when they grow up, they want to sell their body for money. I have never actually seen a child say that. And so to me, the idea that now someone who's 20 or 25 or 30 is doing this out of choice,
but
not because they actually don't have very limited options, is a stretch to me.
Sure, but let me do a little stretching for you.
Yeah.
Because I truly believe that now that we've been sexualizing children and getting children to start self-identifying, there's some parents that are forcing it upon their kids. As a matter of fact, the Mayo Clinic just recently stopped doing sexual transitions, you know, the medical procedures for people, because there have been too many people that were coming back saying, reverse this, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I honestly see that when we start opening that door and enabling children to make bad decisions because they don't have the wisdom and the knowledge that they shouldn't be allowed to make these types of decisions, and we're thrusting it upon them. And so what you were saying, the children aren't making these decisions, I think they're trying to get them to make these decisions. And I think that that transgender process is definitely a fast track or a highway for getting kids into that type of thing.
You know, I have very limited experience with that issue. The experience I have with the issue is that that there is a huge issue with transgender folks being victimized in sex trafficking, the stuff
sure.
that I deal with, right? So
right.
So that's the scope of my kind of wisdom in terms of that issue. But
right.
I will say, just there, you know, there's a national article just recently about that 17-year-old in Florida that
right.
ended up with a soccer coach.
Yep.
Force, fraud, and coercion. All three of those things were present in that story, okay? 17-year-old girl and being taken to another country. I have yet to find an article that even mentions that it could be possible sex trafficking. Yet those are the three items that we say are necessary for trafficking to be present, not even a mention by a single media outlet.
Interesting. So the reason I brought you and asked you to come in is because I wanted to get into what the Jonah Project needs and what we can do, because this is a charitable time of year, and I'm hoping to leverage. I have faith that people will, you know, be charitable this season. So as you can hear, we're up on a hard break. So as soon as we come back, I will let the windows of heaven pour upon you.
Thank you.
Please stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back after this. Well, we're back, and this break between these two segments is a perfect example why I've had a couple of emails actually talk about, well, you know, you should actually do a video cast as well, you know, so that we can kind of see these intercessions between the breaks. And they would be long intercessions sometimes when these are pre-recorded, but there's... If you were a fly on the wall, you would have heard a very good and detailed conversation. Anywho, thank you very much for that stimulating conversation, Aaron.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. You know I love being here.
So, the Jonah Project. We've got two segments here. I know you guys are moving forward. You're still wanting to get another facility, and I think that there's... opportunities for people that might be listening, that might be able to share resources, might be able to share money. Of course, money is probably the most important resource that you need, because that pays the rent, that pays the bills, because most Avista, I don't think they're taking, you know, used bikes right now for
payment. Unfortunately, we have gotten some amazing charity over the last several years, but no, the city of Spokane and Avista Utilities and
landlords.
Those are not the givers that we've been receiving from. So, yes. You know, God can do a miracle, but as of right now, no.
Right. So putting the money aside, do you have like a Christmas list of, you know, of things? So there may be a property owner that might be listening that, you know, could say, you know what, I could probably stand to, you know, rent you this house for, you know, a really, you know, a sweet deal, and to contact you and so forth. I did notice also on your webpage that you've made some changes to, you know, you're not listing the people in the organization, because I think you used to have that up there.
Yep. Yeah. We took that down. Some of that just for some safety.
Safety and privacy.
Reasons,
absolutely.
As we move forward. Yeah. Yeah. And then just trying to streamline the process, you know, as we grow. I mean, when we started, we were just advocating.
Yes.
And in order to do that, obviously, we had to do rescue and relocation. So we were starting that process as well. And then we got properties. We were able to do all three of those important things, right? Rescue, relocation, the advocacy, and now the safe housing. But, of course, now we have a second safe home that's been operating for a little while, and then you need facilities help and someone to go out and fix a water heater in the middle of the night and those types of things. And so as we're going, we are trying to grow intelligently and wisely, and that type of thing. And so we administratively with the website, the way we do donations and some other things like that, I think we just kind of are trying to streamline things and make it easier for people.
Right. And wouldn't it be great if somebody just basically gave you their, you know, a house, you know, up here, this small little home or what have you, then all you have to worry about is pay the state for taxes.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We actually had a church mention a building in another state that's not too far from here that would be perfect. And so it's been 5 or 6 months since they threw that on the table, and then we were just kind of waiting to hear back from them. And I don't know where that's going to go, but, you know, it could be something in town, something rural. We would like to get another space in town for a boys' home. We are helping, obviously, women and young girls. But I do think down the road, having a boys' home is really going to help kind of change the game. But part of growing wisely is that we are really understaffed. And so we need to do one of two things. Either we need a good amount of people, a group of people to commit a significant amount of time and commit a significant amount of time for the near future to the project.
So is there, other than them being, you know, generous in heart and just a good person, are there skills like, you know, would it be helpful if you had a nurse or would it be?
Sure. We have a couple of mental health professionals, a couple of nurses on the team. Someone that comes in with skills in this arena, it's certainly very valuable. But there are two words that we talk to all of our volunteers about from the moment we sit down with them, before they've even met me, when they're speaking with like Diana or what have you. And the two words are this: available and consistent. And I can tell you right now that it is much, much easier for me to find someone with amazing skill sets right now. And for the last 3 years, I've got people with skill sets coming out of the woodworks, like left and right.
Okay, good.
But they want to be paid to like counsel these young ladies.
Right. And
I have a fully volunteer staff. I'm not even paying our house parents, our rescue team, or myself.
Right.
Right. So the reality is finding someone that can contribute time and be available and consistent are the two hardest things.
Yeah.
For me to find.
And so to put this into context, this adds to the challenge that because it's fully volunteer and because, you know, you're only taking, 60% of the profits? I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So because this is fully volunteer and you are actually, as I understand, with your wife having a job, is subsidizing way too much of this and so forth, that the community, you're really reliant upon community help. And so
I got a great example for you, actually, GR. Just 4 days ago, I've been back now in the United States for a day.
Okay.
Just 4 days ago, a woman that we were working with was taken. We had been working with her for a couple of weeks. We were called by the crisis shelter because, you know, they're not equipped for this kind of trauma. And so we've been working with this young lady. She was taken to another country. And so I got a call. We went and we got her. Okay, I just got back a day ago. That's about a $2,000 trip. Okay?
Right.
Now, $2,000 for a human life, it's not even comparable.
Oh, so let me add some context to this. Are you telling me that these women, these young women, adult women, these young boys and adolescent boys and so forth, these are actually children of some parents out there, and maybe somebody's mom, maybe somebody's daughter or son. Mm-hmm. So this isn't just some abandoned toy or some abandoned artifact or something.
Yeah.
So
Child of God. Right?
What I'm trying to put into context for the listeners is that these are human beings that actually are the, you know, the children of a man and a woman, maybe stolen from their home, maybe perverted and subverted and, you know, coerced, forced, and as you've talked about, dragged into this process really unwittingly.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that because, in fact, this human being that I'm working with right now, we are now, we're surrounding her with resources and getting her back plugged in with family and things like that. And from the people most intimate to her in her life, she's being questioned, like, you know, why would you allow them to take you? You get some kind of, this is literally one of the quotes that we got from an intimate family member. What is this, some kind of adrenaline rush for you? I asked the family member and the social worker at the same time. I said, a couple hundred years ago, we freed a lot of slaves. And we know historically many of them went back. What would cause somebody to go back to a situation where maybe a spouse was sold down the river, maybe a child had a limb cut off because they tried to run away, and you would go back to that because it's an adrenaline rush? This is a fundamental misunderstanding of two things. And GR, I love that you hit that. This is somebody's child that didn't grow up with this being their dream.
Right.
And we fundamentally misunderstand this trauma.
And you've said this before, so I need to repeat this, because getting somebody to go back and listen to these very specific podcasts where you have been on, like in July 19th and in August and so forth, putting this into context, these people and their mindset and their paradigm has been dramatically changed because the process that goes into conforming these people, they're broken like a horse, even worse.
Yes. That's the thing, is they don't see value in themselves anymore. They don't see themselves as a human being. They're not many times even allowed to use their real name, so that the person that they've had to become, which isn't really even a person anymore.
I'm in that boat.
Yeah.
I can't use my real name.
Yeah, it can be, right? So these bad guys can summon the performer at the drop of a dime when they need to.
Absolutely. And folks, this is an epidemic and it's only getting worse. As a matter of fact, I would say you could probably quantify this in percentages. How is this growing over the past?
It's doubled in a decade.
It's doubled in a decade. So it could, and I believe it's an exponential process that we're seeing this grow and grow and grow. And I think one of the things that you articulated, we're coming up on a hard break here, but I know that you articulated before that this is an economic problem.
Yes.
Because as long as, and I think it's a moral crisis, because like I said before, we've let the genie out of the bottle and we have completely allowed, hey, as long as it feels good, go do it, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that mentality has to stop. We can no longer allow ourselves to debase ourselves and to chase self-indulgence. Discipline is a key.
It is. You know, I want to. So one of the things that I know there's a lot of arguments about is pornography and whether or not we should, you know, that what freedom should look like there.
Oh, sure.
Homeland Security and the FBI tell us that 25%, one quarter of all pornographic images are the result of the slave trade.
Interesting. And so with this hard break right here, we're going to leave you on the seat of your chair. We've got one more segment to do, folks. So please stay tuned. We need your help and we'll be right back. Okay, so we are back on our final segment. And so the website is thejonahproject.org.
No the, just Jonah Project.
Jonah Project, not the, but jonahproject.org. I wanted to ask this before we get too far. Are you working with other specific organizations like the Underground? Because there's the movies out there that other people are doing this. And is there this effort of, should I call this a corporate merger and acquisition type of thing?
Yeah. You know, there were really two things that I felt called to when we first started engaging in trafficking. One of those two things was very specifically, and I still have a pencil sketch that I showed my team 2.5 years ago, and where I drew a map of the United States, and I started plotting out the cities that we knew this was an issue, and looking at what it would take. Like I felt called to, in fact, I use the term constantly with my team. We talk about it on our website as well, Underground Railroad. And I think that's starting to kind of catch with some other agencies as well, or they've been using it and probably been around longer than we have. But we talk about it on two levels. One, with the healing aspect of what we're dealing with, right? Harriet Tubman addressed it, and she's the most famous conductor that ever lived of an Underground Railroad, right?
Right.
I freed 1,000 slaves, right, and I could have freed 1,000 more if they knew they were slaves. And you talk about the mindsets and the culture and the society stuff, and we get to at break about that. And then the other aspect is the physical and geographic relocation to keep people safe and why that railroad needs to exist. So our goal from here, with the assumption that the Spokane community decides that they are, as a community, gonna step up and keep an anti-trafficking presence here in Spokane.
Right.
If we were to grow, we'd go to Phoenix or Denver. And the reason is we're actually working with another organization that's working on places like Chicago and Atlanta. One of the things that would be great for my rescue and relocation team, I just mentioned again something that was pretty harrowing the last couple of days going into another country, would be if I had Phoenix or Denver online, and the other organization that we're teaming up with has either Chicago or Atlanta, I can transport a human being anywhere in this country without ever having to leave an airport. And what that does for us in terms of physical safety is huge. So there's a lot of reasons to build that railroad. The issue and the challenge that we're facing is that there aren't a lot of like-minded agencies in agreement with what healing should look like.
But here's my biggest problem with your organization is that it is a reaction to a symptom. Mm-hmm. And the real cure, as we've talked about when we first met, is changing the moral background and the backbone of this nation, restoring the mores that are required for a good, righteous, civil society to function, because we have debased ourselves. Again, like I said, the genie is out of the bottle, and it's only getting worse and worse. And it started way back when I had my conversation with Mark Erbach, that he believes that, you know, we have allowed the court to get rid of the Christianity in this country. That happened a long, long time ago, and we are now facing a government that is enforcing secularism and enforcing their doctrine. And so to really solve this problem, we really have to go back to some real changes.
Yeah, I, just in all fairness, and I hear that as far as our group being reactionary. What I would say, though, is that we're the only group that has proactive housing. Like, in other words, that houses.
No. So what I'm saying isn't an indictment. What I'm saying is it's unfortunate.
Oh, yes.
That
yes.
We're, you know, and it's great that you're doing this, because you are bringing light upon, you know, these dark places, and people will support you and do all of that. But nobody, it's really a sad indictment that we can't get the conversation even started. And why is this becoming the problem?
Well, I've got just one high school off the top of my head. I'll give you an example, and I'm not going to mention them specifically, okay? But I've had this conversation now with four different principals, two from high schools and two from junior highs, okay? And the conversation goes something like this: no, I don't want you talking about that stuff on my campus, because I don't want my campus to be seen as the campus that's the epicenter for this problem. We don't have anybody brave enough to provide leadership on this issue. The reality is, and we'll tout the politicians, like, you know, like, say, Kevin Parker, for example, who was part of getting legislation back in 2003, right, to make this the first state in the union that had anti-trafficking laws.
Right.
But then we don't even touch the issue for another half decade until 2008.
Right.
We do a semi-meaningful study then, and we don't touch it. I mean, it's 2017 now, GR, right? So that it's a huge issue that even those that believe that this is an issue for Christians to address don't want to provide any leadership for this.
Right.
There are 497 churches in Spokane.
Right.
Two of them fund our project.
Right. I believe truly righteous people, you know, are on their knees to pray that Spokane becomes like the city of Enoch. But I also believe that you probably have a prayer in your heart and on a daily basis that you wish you could, you know, be ran out of business because there's no more to do.
Yes.
That you could go
God
off
will
into
find
another...
something else for me. It'll be about compassion and freedom. It won't be. Yeah, absolutely, brother. Yes.
Let me put this back into, you know, hopefully while you're here. So the JonahProject.org or JonahProject.org.
Yeah, just JonahProject.org or Facebook. The vast majority of stuff that you're going to find, especially our donate.
Can you give me a Christmas list of some stuff that you could really use, tangible stuff other than money, in addition to money? Because I know you need money, and I know the listeners are hearing this.
What else
do you need?
I'd love to. So let's talk about some things that small businesses could help out with, for example.
Sure.
We desperately need a small business to step up to provide things like snow removal coming this winter for our safe homes,
right?
If we had a small business, somebody with some integrity that would understand what we're doing and that these homes have to stay private,
right?
We desperately need somebody to step up, like a mechanic, an auto shop, to say, hey, we'll help repair these vehicles, understanding that when you guys are I am putting tons of miles on our personal vehicles every day.
Have you gone to dealerships to say, hey, can you support this vehicle or these vehicles? You know, because the dealership actually has the deeper pockets to do this. Like Dishman Dodge might be a good one. I mean, I've tried to pull them in for philanthropic purposes, but, you know, because Marty, before she passed away, she was very involved in community efforts. So her sister is running that now.
Yeah.
And so I would say go see Sherry at Dishman Dodge. She may be willing to give you that kind of
underwriting. Yeah, I can't answer every individual. I will say this. Yeah. The vast majority of my time is sitting in a room with someone who's been traumatized beyond belief.
And you don't have the resources to do all that.
Well, no, I would simply say that you would have to ask Diana, who's our fundraising director.
Okay, yeah.
Like, literally for me, I'm doing rescue relocation, assessments, walking human beings through life, doing radio shows and stuff like that.
Right.
So I don't know that we haven't.
Her access or her information is on your website.
Yes, and she's just a heck of a lady. She runs what we call our donation center. She's also our volunteer coordinator. So if someone needed brochures or something, she would also be the person to talk to. But back to the Christmas list, one of the things that we and this is a larger ticket item. We need a vehicle that we could dedicate simply to rescue and relocation so that I wasn't always using personal vehicles, right? That's a bigger ticket item. That's probably a few thousand bucks probably. So that's kind of a bigger one. One of the kind of smaller items that maybe some folks out there could help with is I would love to do like Christmas tree deliveries to some of these neighborhoods. And, you know, where we started and how we built equity in the community was before we even had a safe home, was me going out and delivering Christmas trees that my wife and I would buy, or that maybe I'd get one donated from my son's landscaping company.
Uh-huh.
And that develops relationship and also develops avenues for me to get information on where these bad guys are at and what they're doing.
Right.
And so the reality is, you know, there could be someone out there who would say, hey, we'd like to step up and donate 10 Christmas trees. Here's, say, $250. Go buy 10 $25 trees. Or there's a lot of other kind of Christmassy things that could be donated during this season as well.
Right. So people don't know, but maybe you can talk to Diana and your web developer to maybe either create a page or something to at least, here's what we need, at least have a running list.
If you
list.
Go on our website
oh,
right now,
okay.
You will have a tab that says donate.
Yes.
And if you click on donate, you will have so many options. You can donate money. You can donate items. You will see a list of needs.
Absolutely.
You will see.
Okay, you have a list of needs.
All of that's on there if you look at it. And it's also on our Facebook.
Okay, because some people don't know what you need, and they may not have the money, but they may actually have that extra vehicle.
Absolutely.
They may actually have an extra house, but they may not have the liquid assets to be able to commit or something like that. So, folks, it's that time of year. If you do have any room in your heart and any blessings you've received with charity, and let me just say this, that if you start contributing, there's no doubt in my mind you will be blessed, because the Lord has said in Malachi that, you know, when we, you know, do sacrifices, tithes, and those types of things, we do receive the blessings from heaven. And I pray that this Christmas is one that opens the windows of heaven and blesses you for your charity.
Yes.
So thank you. We will be back next week, and we will be reclaiming the Republic. So stay tuned for our next show.
Thank you.